Today, Senator and former football coach Tommy Tuberville talks about standing up for principle in Congress and what we can expect with Title IX and the future of women's sports.
This is going to destroy Title IX, men playing in women's sports, because what's going to happen is these young girls and women are not going to get into sports at a young age because they can't compete at a level that most men can. It's just unfair and it's unsafe.
Then we'll hear how, for the first time, a new legal tactic is being used against pro-life activists that could have tremendous consequences for the protection of the unborn.
And so my desire is that that's going to light a fire in the church to finally stand up and go no more.
It's the weekend of June 8th and 9th. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. All too often, moral principle and courage are in short supply. That's especially true in Washington, D.C. There are exceptions, however. People who are willing to put their neck on the line for what is morally right. In 2023, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin directed the Department of Defense to start providing travel and paid leave for service members and their dependents to get non-covered elective abortions. In response to that, U.S. Senator from Alabama and well-known football coach Tommy Tuberville used his influence to force the Senate to vote on military promotions one at a time rather than in large groups. Now, he was criticized for that, but it did call attention to the culture war the Pentagon was fighting and the need for the rule of law. He's with us today to talk about that. Senator Tuberville, welcome to The Stand Radio.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. And there's nothing better to talk about than fighting for life in this country.
Absolutely. Now, when you first decided to use your influence in military promotions, did you think that the opposition and political pressure would be as bad as it turned out to be?
No, not really. You know, this is supposed to be a city of negotiation and to try to work your problems out. I gave the Democrats way too much credit for that. You know, after Roe Wade, Joe Biden, his administration figured, well, we can't control the state laws, but we can control the federal employees. And so what happened is they went after the VA first, and I actually got a vote on that, but I lost. Mm-hmm. They had never done abortions in the VA before, but now they have started. Actually lost a couple of Republican votes on that, which cost us. Then they decided to go after the military after that worked. So military for years has had, I guess 35 years, has had an abortion policy that's been very, very effective. Been no complaints whatsoever. And so Joe Biden and the Department of Defense, they're going to change it to their liking without going through Congress. And basically I told them, I said, listen, the last I looked, you know, we change the laws here. We make the laws. And we don't need help from the White House. Now, you get an opportunity to veto it or not, but don't change the laws. Well, they did without going through Congress. And I said, well, if you do this, I'm going to put a hold on all your admirals and generals, all your flag officers. And so I thought we would probably have to stand off for about 3-4 weeks. Mm-hmm. I got no negotiation from anybody. They could care less. They don't care about the military to begin with, but they sure don't care about life. And so they left it the way it was, the way they changed it. And the complaint that I was having was taxpayers are having to fund abortions in this country, and it's against the law. But unfortunately, this administration cares nothing about the law. They care about their preference. So we held out for about 11 months, and I even started having Republicans that were supposedly are pro-life come after me, and it looked like they were going to change the rule and go around me to make this happen. So we had to give in, unfortunately, but the fight is still on.
11 months is a long time to stand your ground. Now, where did you get encouragement along the way to remain firm in your stance against that policy?
Well, of course, I come up from a pro-life state in Alabama and got a lot of encouragement from the people of Alabama and from pro-life groups all over the country. Tony Perkins was one of the guys that really stood beside us, and it was tough. But you got to remember, I came from a coaching profession where you took criticism all the time. A lot of these people up here never had a job before; they've never been criticized, so criticism didn't bother me as long as I know I'm doing the right thing. And I still believe I was doing the right thing. It just, you know, I've run out of time and run out of supporters.
Okay. I want to pick up on that just a little bit, Senator, because you had a 40-year career coaching college football. You retired among the top 50 most winning football coaches of all time. And you've already alluded to that, but how did those years prepare you for what you've encountered in Washington?
You know, anytime you coach, you're going to get a lot of criticism, whether you win or lose. And then you have to explain yourself. Then you have to stand up to it. And you have to understand that when you go home at night, you got to be able to shut it off. And again, as I said, there's a lot of praise that's handed around to coaches, but there's probably four or five times more criticism than you're going to get in any other profession. So that prepared me to some degree. But again, working with young people also in my profession gave me an opportunity to learn a lot from them, learn a lot from standing up for what's right. And again, I had two good parents, and I tell people, if you're born in this country, you hit the lottery, greatest country ever. And if you're born in this country with two parents, you've hit the lottery again. And so my parents gave me an opportunity to grow up in a common sense world with based on Christianity and based on the Constitution. So very fortunate.
Well said. Now, what were some of the successes that did come out of this opposition to the Pentagon's travel policy?
Well, the big thing is it was just a fight. We brought it out to light. Normally what they do something, they change the law, they change the Constitution, they break the law, and you hear a little bit about it because the mainstream media is not going to hold their feet to the fire. They're just not going to do it. And so by standing up for this, and for them coming after me, we got a lot of public attention. People started seeing, hey, wait a minute, you know, this probably is not the right thing to do. It's change the rules in the middle of the game without going through Congress, which is why we were elected. And so there was a lot of criticism that went back towards the Pentagon, back towards the White House. And of course, a lot of people saying, I'm holding up, our military. We're looking down. We're looking at tough times overseas. We need a strong military. This really had nothing to do with that. They were still doing their jobs. They just weren't promoted, might not have an extra star or whatever. Everybody was still doing their jobs, but they made up all kinds of things that would put pressure on me. And then that never bothered me. What bothered me was I started having Republicans go after me on the floor, calling me everything but a United States citizen. And then they started... Senator Schumer from the Democratic side put a new rule into effect that they could go around my holds because of national security and promote these people. So basically they were breaking the law, found a way around it, but they had to have 60 votes. And unfortunately they had 10 or 15 Republicans that sided with the Democrats against pro-life. So I think in the future, those 10 or 15 people that really did not stand with me will pay the price at the ballot box. I hope they do. But again, that's up to the people that vote for them in their states.
Senator, what is your advice to those who may be listening who are in places of authority and they want to stand up for what is right, but that pressure is just almost overwhelming? What would you say to those people who are listening?
Well, you got to have morals in this country, and you got to have a set of morals. It's like you got to have a basic set of rules that you believe in. And then, you know, they've got to be solid. Plus, they have to have backing. Is it the right thing to do? Is it the right thing for the people? I'm up here representing 5 million people from the state of Alabama, and I wouldn't do anything to jeopardize, you know, their belief in what I'm doing. But again, I had very, very little counter speech, you know, that come through the state of Alabama to me that was against what I was doing. So you've got to build a basis of what you stand for. I ran on pro-life, and I believe in pro-life. I ran on Christian values. And if you stand with those values and what you believe in, instead of being wishy-washy like most politicians do, that you go with the wind, then I think people will understand that, hey, you're here for the right reasons.
It seems to me, Senator, that one of the new battles that's on the forefront, and really you are getting into that, is Title IX and the issue of gender and the issue of biological males who are participating in women's sports. If you would you just speak to that for a moment and just sort of compare the culture war between what you've already experienced with the Pentagon and what we're looking at in women's sports?
Yeah, well, the first thing you have to look at this administration, they do not like family whatsoever. Trying to tear the nuclear family down. They don't want the father living at home. They basically want government to raise the kids. And we're seeing that all throughout what's going on in our government schools and how they're mandated and the things that the kids are being taught now and things that are not being taught, like civics and reading and writing and holding people to merit other than all this equalization, this diversity, equity, and inclusion, which absolutely is going to destroy our education system. But they've done several things that you can tell that they're just going after the people in this country in terms of our young people. You know, Title IX is almost 52 years old. Title IX is probably the best thing that ever came out of Washington, D.C. And feminist groups stood up for it 50-something years ago. And I, growing up in the sports business, I saw women's sports just flourish because of Title IX. More funding, better facilities, same amount of coaches as the men have, all those things that made women's sports. And it kept getting better and better. Well, now, last year, the Department of Education, they published 116 pages of its proposed change to Title IX regulations. Now, wait a minute. We've got a law that's set, but it goes back to the abortion policy that I held up in the military. They're changing the thing that has made women sports and gave an opportunity to young girls and women to prosper and even make money through sports. They're going to change it because they want to change it, not because the law says they can change it. So they proposed 116 pages of new regulations. One of those, I can't even believe we're talking about. It is basically says that boys and men can play against women in sports if they feel like they can, if it feels like it's their calling. Has nothing to do with right or wrong. But again, it goes back to they're tearing the family down, the nuclear family, and they're tearing gender down. They don't want any gender. They want everybody to be the same. And we all know that's not true. You can't change gender. I mean, sir, you're either male or you're female. But this is going to destroy Title IX, men playing in women's sports, because what's going to happen is these young girls and women are not going to get into sports at a young age because they can't compete at a level that most men can. It's just unfair and it's unsafe. And it's just that's just part of it. So, the rule changes of Title IX, the women, men playing in women's sports. I've got a bill out. It's called Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. You know, it basically does the opposite of what Joe Biden's doing. He says that if you don't let boys play in women's sports, we're going to defund federally your money. And, the House passed the bill last March, and I asked the Senate to approve the bill by unanimous consent, but the Democrats blocked it. All Democrats, 100% of them, voted against blocking men playing in women's sports. I mean, it's just a Democratic policy, and it's just unfortunate that you don't have enough people on the Democratic side who will stand up for women in this country. Where are the feminist groups that got Title IX passed? So now I've got a new bill out that says that protect women in amateur and Olympic sports, because now the Olympic Committee has said each individual sport can decide whether a man can participate in the Olympics in that sport. Well, the first one out is boxing. Boxing now is going to allow in the Olympics men to box against women. They're going to be a disaster, absolute disaster. I hate that something like this is going to probably have to come to a conclusion after somebody gets hurt, but that's exactly what we're asking for it to happen.
Senator Tommy Tuberville, we appreciate your moral clarity. What you say and what you're doing is a great inspiration to all of us, and we can only pray that others around you will stiffen their spine and stand up and do what is right as well. Senator, it's been a great joy to talk to you and a great pleasure. Thanks for being with us today. Injustice comes in many forms. Sometimes it's allowing the destruction of innocent children, and other times it's in the twisting of the legal system to go after those that defend the unborn. In the case of Coleman Boyd, ER doctor, husband, and father of 13, it's both.
I was a born-again Christian since 1992, zealous for the Lord, loved the Lord, doing missions, ministry all over the U.S., all over the world, and for some reason, I never saw it as a practical thing from I need to be doing something about the shedding of innocent blood. And then in 2007, as I was just reading through the scriptures like I always do and was reading through Proverbs after I don't know how many times. And as I read Proverbs 24:11, it says, if thou forbear to deliver them that are drawn to destruction and them that are taken to death, if you say we did not know it, does not he who ponders the heart and he who knows the mind, does he not know it? And will he not give to each one according to his ways? And that obviously can mean many things. I mean, that's the Lord's heart towards the lost. But for some reason, the Spirit of God just pricked me as I read through it that morning and was like, this applies to the babies being aborted. And it was just like a light bulb came on. And so as I continued reading that same morning, as I read on through Proverbs, I got to Proverbs 31:8. It says, open your mouth for the speechless, for the cause of all them that are led to destruction. And again, same stirring by the Lord that this is babies being taken to abortion. Now, I don't think that that's all that that's written for, obviously, but for whatever reason, I had not seen that before. And God just hit me with it. And I can remember going to my wife, but we had three children then, I think, maybe we were pregnant with our fourth, and saying, I know there's an abortion mill somewhere in Jackson. I don't know where it's at, but we're going to find it. And we started going out there with our family on the sidewalk. And so that was kind of a part of what we did. And then in 2017, God really just broke me all before that we had to give everything to see this ended or our nation's going to be destroyed. And so that's when we went from doing ministry on the sidewalk weekly when we were able to, and during seasons, we've got a big family, and so during farming and homeschooling, we didn't go as often, to where it became our principal ministry. If we were not directed by the Lord to be somewhere else, we were going to be on the sidewalk in Jackson, just because we see it as such a vital thing that, one, to stand up for these babies, and two, for our nation, that we are going to be destroyed if we don't do something.
Through the conviction of the Word of God and after much prayer, Coleman and his wife decided they would be on the front lines, pleading with women to save their babies. They traveled across the country with other like-minded families to interact with women on their way to get an abortion. Eventually, this led them to Mount Juliet, Tennessee.
Mount Juliet had one of the two abortion mills in the area, Carafem, and so we were on the sidewalk there one day that week, at Planned Parenthood one day that week. And then on March 5th, we went there and did ministry. But that day we went inside a medical building that housed a lot of different clinics. And then it also had an abortion mill in it on the second floor. And so we went to the second floor in the public access area. I was at the end of the hallway and preaching and praying and singing, and so we were there early that morning before they opened. Once the workers came, went inside, and then called the police. And the police came. And when the police asked me to leave, I ended up leaving. And then others stayed for a while and left without getting charged with any kind of trespass or anything. And then there were 13 that stayed and were charged with local trespass that day, 4 juveniles and 9 adults, I think. And in my mind, that was just like every other ministry that we do. We go out and our heart is preach the gospel, rebuke sin, preach the law of God and the glorious gospel of Jesus, offer help to mamas. And sometimes we see babies saved. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we walk away knowing a baby probably died that day, or lots of babies died, but that we planted seeds and crying out to God to let those seeds be there to pierce that mama's heart down the road, that when she comes to the point of brokenness, she would turn to the Lord and find salvation. You know, we don't know what all God's doing, but we know we're there to be his ministers and to offer help and trust him with the outcome. And so as far as I was concerned, that was it. That's what happened that day. But he had some other plans for us.
What should have been an ordinary outreach event at an abortion facility turned into an encounter with the Biden administration Department of Justice. Coleman and five others were charged, then convicted on January 30th of violating federal law. Steve Crampton is senior counsel with the Thomas More Society and represents one of Coleman's co-defendants, Paul Vaughn.
The charges being brought against Coleman Boyd and the other co-defendants are two. One, a violation of the FACE Act, Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances, which prohibits, among other things, physical obstruction of a, quote, reproductive healthcare facility. The second charge really is the twist here, and that is a conspiracy against rights, which is a federal statute adopted back in like the 1870s under part of the Ku Klux Klan Act to prohibit interference with constitutional rights in particular, such as the right to vote. So what makes this case significant in many respects is, one, the severity of the charges and the prosecution, and two, that they've brought that conspiracy statute to bear, in our understanding, for the first time in our nation's history, Jeff, against peaceful protesters engaging in everyday kind of civil disobedience. So I think that puts this case in a category all by itself.
The idea that we live in a land where children can be murdered tells you the layout of where we're at. Truth has fallen. Isaiah talks about, you know, justice has turned back. Truth has fallen in the streets. The idea that we could even have the possibility of the murder of innocent children be called pro-choice is just insanity to me. But it shows where we're at as a nation. So when we allow that in our streets, to me, it's no surprise then that those who would love their neighbor enough to go, whether it be to go preach the gospel there and to plead for help and to open our mouth, or to those who would see that they need to sit in front of that door. Either way, it's no surprise to me that we're going to be prosecuted and we're going to be have to pay a price for it. Until we come to repentance as a nation, that's the direction we're going. And so it grieves me, but it doesn't surprise me.
As Steve Crampton tells us, there are far-reaching implications of using this method of going after pro-lifers.
The way that the Department of Justice has now pressed into service this conspiracy against rights statute in particular opens the door to the use of that statute against any kind of peaceful protesters or violent protesters, for that matter. Folks engaging in the time-honored tradition that our nation really is founded upon of civil disobedience has now become a potential target, at least, for any zealous prosecutor in the federal realm to come against them with this statute that contains the upper limit of a 10-year prison sentence. So even those folks engaging in the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas kind of protests where they've blocked the entrance to the White House, for instance. They block highways. Consider BLM and Antifa actions. All those things that this administration in particular has celebrated in the past, now in the hands of a federal prosecutor, can become the target of folks that want to put them away for years and years. It completely changes the playing field, in my view, Jeff, of the engaging in peaceful protest. Again, never in our nation's history have we seen this kind of what I would call vicious, targeted action by a politically motivated prosecutor against select groups of protesters. So the sentencing is coming up now on July the 2nd, at least for some of them. There are some motions pending for a continuance on certain defendants. But at any rate, our client, Paul Vaughn, and hopefully others will appear on July the 2nd, at which time the judge will consider a memo from the probation officer analyzing the charges under the federal sentencing guidelines, making certain recommendations. We will have letters of support from the public that weigh in and urge the court for leniency and so forth. We'll be able to make arguments to the court as to why the sentence should be lenient. And the defendants will have an opportunity themselves to address the court if they so desire. Nonetheless, Jeff, the fact remains that every single one of the defendants in Tennessee is now standing before the court in July as a convicted felon. So felony charges in and of themselves, whether they serve a single day in prison, carry enormous penalties and put you under that black cloud of being labeled forevermore a convicted felon.
When people look on this, my hope and prayer is it's going to stir them up to go, this is unjust. And then a light bulb will hopefully go off and go, yeah, but how much more unjust is it for a precious, innocent baby who has done nothing to anyone? They are the least of these, and they are being poisoned and their skin burned, depending on the method, or their limbs ripped off and their skulls crushed. And the injustice done to them is exponentially more than what's being threatened towards the handful of us Christians that are on trial right now. And so my desire is that that's going to light a fire in the church to finally stand up and go, no more.
In addition to praying for the end of abortion, both Coleman Boyd and Steve Crampton urge us to support the repeal of the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances, or FACE Act. You can also write a letter to the federal judge in Tennessee asking for leniency for Coleman Boyd and the other defendants. The instructions and judge's address are on the Stand Radio podcast page at AFR.net. Next week, it's a best of program on the Stand Radio. Pastor Andrew Davis shares the how-tos of memorizing scripture and gives us a ton of practical benefits. Also, Rob West of Kingdom Advisors will give us some good advice on training children to manage money. You can get guest information and action points on today's topics by going to AFR.net and scrolling down to the Stand Radio. A free 6-month trial subscription to the Stand magazine is also available at afa.net/the Stand. Thanks for listening today, and join us again next time here on the Stand Radio.